Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and joining me today is Alex Brown, fellow host on the show. Alex, thanks for taking some time today.
Thank you very much for having me again, Graham.
And this week, we're going to do another edition of Wiretaps, which is kind of a new segment that we've really been enjoying producing here. So we're Wiretaps for everyone, if this is your first exposure to it, is a kind of a deep dive into people's entries on the wires on clearadmit.com. So whether it's LiveWire or ApplyWire or DecisionWire, where people are kind of keeping track of different aspects of the application process. And since it's kind of early in the admissions season, we're focusing on ApplyWire, which is the tool that folks can use to get insights and advice from our staff as well as fellow Clear Admit community members about their candidacy. So it's a place where you just go and, you know, you put in what schools you're looking at and things like, you know, your GMAT or GRE, GPA, all that good stuff and a little bit of information about your goals. And so what Alex and I are going to do today is we're going to go through a handful of very recent entries on ApplyWire and just share our insights into these candidates. So Alex, if you're ready, why don't we just dive in with the first one that we're going to look at today?
Sounds good.
So the first person that we're going to look at is based in New York City, GMAT score of 710 and a GPA of 3.8. He or she have been working for 3 years and they are a trader. So working in the financial markets and the post-MBA career that this person is targeting is a bit of a mixed bag. They have kind of listed consulting, tech, maybe venture capital or entrepreneurship. Some target companies include the kind of, you know, Bain, BCG, McKinsey, Tesla, and Sequoia Capital. So a little bit all over the map. They want to start school next in the fall of 2020. And they indicate that they are head of trading at a top quantitative hedge fund. And it's someone who says that they pride themselves on pursuing a more inclusive culture at work, helping improve social mobility via extracurriculars. And this person's looking, obviously, to transition from a trading role to a longer-term focus on strategy and using data to create more efficient organizations. They also mentioned that they're a first-generation college graduate and a first-generation immigrant from Mexico. So Alex, what's your take on this person's candidacy? They did indicate, one more thing I forgot is that they gave us a list of schools, which looks to be the M7. We've got Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago, and Penn. I guess Columbia is the only one not on there, right, from the M7.
Yeah, I found that a bit curious itself since the candidate is in New York City. So what do they know about Columbia that they're trying to avoid?
So, or maybe they just want to change the scenery, which
would be perfectly fine. But obviously, you know, as a trader, being New York City makes a lot of sense where they are now. I throw that back to you, Graham, your time at Wharton. The first thing that struck me is we don't often see traders applying to MBA programs. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, a lot more investment bankers. I had one guy in my cohort who was a trader, and we had a great one of the finance classes. He gave kind of a lesson in how trading works, and all the like. he was even talking about like bond trading and the hand gestures they use out on the trading floor. I guess back then they were still doing that. I don't know if it's all automated now, but in any event, it was just interesting. But you're right, not a traditional path into business school.
One thing I did like, however, despite that, is the person, he or she states that they were head of trading at a top quant hedge fund. That sounds to me, Graham, like a pretty good set of experience, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at this person's profile, kind of leading the trading function at a, you know, purportedly top quantitative hedge fund. Yeah, I think that there's clearly some good work experience here and probably interesting stories to share. You cannot ignore the fact that this person is first generation to go to college and first generation immigrant from Mexico. So that's, you know, obviously going to be less common. This isn't sort of Joe Schmo from Long Island who makes their way into New York City and gets a job. And there are some hurdles here that have been, jumped over or whatever, that have been successfully surmounted, right? That are notable.
I would agree with you on that point. Absolutely. I think this person has probably overcome some barriers to get to where they are today. And you know, oftentimes, you know, you talk about underrepresented minorities and you know, whether they get a, you know how that all plays out in admissions, and you know, is it fair that someone from an underrepresented background perhaps has statistics a little bit lower than someone from an overrepresented background? But the reality is, oftentimes someone from an underrepresented background has to have overcome quite significant challenges to get to where they are, to accomplish what they've done, that someone else may not have had to experience. So I think it's always good to frame it that way. And in that regard, this candidate needs to, rather than just rely on the fact that they're a first generation migrant, talk about those challenges to some extent and how they've shaped who they are today. And clearly, they have shaped this person because they go on to state that they have really pushed for an inclusive culture at work, helping to improve social mobility. These are two signals to me that this person themselves has had to overcome these issues and is now paying it forward.
Agreed. The other thing I would say is that, you know, when you're assembling a class as an admissions officer, you're looking for people who are just going to have different perspectives in the classroom. And so in addition to this person maybe having, you know, kind of overcome some pretty long odds, they have a different kind of, you know, cultural background and experience and, you know, totally worth, you know, kind of having in the classroom. Now, with all that said, we've kind of been, you know, pretty favorable here on this candidate. I personally have identified a couple of danger zones with this entry and kind of their approach. And I don't know if you would agree, but for me, the career goals and maybe even the GMAT are a little bit weaknesses. So at this point, those are two weaknesses that I'm identifying if this person continues to say they're targeting basically the best, you know, six schools in the land.
Yes.
Right. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously the person has a very strong GPA. So assuming it's from a decent school and they were quite active during college, I think the person's probably smart. And clearly, the sort of role that the person has at a hedge fund, a top quant hedge fund, would signal to me this person is smart. I think, you know, the 710 GMAT is less than average for the top tier schools to which they're applying, but it's only slightly less. So these schools will clearly be admitting people with a similar GMAT score, but the GMAT score doesn't help them. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I'd want to see the breakdown of the score as well. I'd really love to know if, you know, how strong or weak is the quant section on that exam and, you know, all that stuff. But I agree. Yeah, it's not out of range. Like there are people getting in with this score, but as you correctly point out, it's not going to get them in. Their scores, it might kind of make it a little harder. It's not going to get them in. It's not one of those like 760s or something, right? So
yeah. I'm sorry. I was going to transition to that too. To your second point, this person's goals. I completely agree that they need much sharper focus to be credible in admissions, and that's very important for a candidate to show that credibility that they've really thought this through. And they have a solid plan going forward. And my initial thinking for this person is that short term, they should go into consulting as an option, sort of focusing on data-driven strategy, which is clearly a pathway that they're exploring. Using that time in consulting to really identify their path going forward from there. That all said, the person really does need to have a long-term goal. Would you agree with that, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, I think for better or for worse right now, it seems like, yeah, my guess, I mean, I hate to try to just paint someone into a corner a little bit, but my guess is they're kind of like, well, what do people do after business school? If they don't, you know, if you don't want to stay as a trader in kind of a, you know, quant role, you go to strategy consulting. It's kind of a logical landing point. And so they've got, you know, the three big, you know, the main firms that one might target for consulting in Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. And then, you know, for me, the other two firms on the list, Tesla and Sequoia Capital, are just kind of brand name firms in their domain. And I just wondered, you know, does this person maybe drive a Tesla and really like it? You know, do they kind of look up to Sequoia Capital? Like, there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. So they need to come up with some kind of a focus. And I think, yeah, clearly this idea about using, I mean, obviously we live in an era where, you know, the largest growing segment in management education is kind of data analytics. And so there's a need. And so to the extent that this person can kind of go and do strategy consulting, but keep that sort of heavy data focus and then, you know, move into something, I'm not sure what it would be. Maybe it's setting up their own hedge fund or, you know, maybe they're making an entirely different transition. But to the extent that what they've done to date and what they plan to do in the short term can be somehow linked up to what they want to do in the long term, that would be helpful. I don't, you know, again, there would be all kinds of things that this person may want to do. I mean, they seem passionate about helping people that are, you know, kind of underrepresented, you know, giving people social mobility. I don't know if there's anything, you know, just even a bigger picture that would help help them in advance that goal as well. But in any event, yeah, there's work that needs to be done here and only they can do it. But I think there's definitely work that needs to be done here.
Now, I completely agree. Having said that, I do think this person has the opportunity to do very well if they've sharpened up their candidacy a little bit. Very good.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's move on to our next wiretaps victim here. So this one comes from a candidate who is also located in New York. Seems like New Yorkers were out in force on ApplyWire over the last week. So this New Yorker has a GRE score of 334, a GPA of 3.5, 3 years of work experience in quantitative finance. Post-MBA career goal is to work in consulting and maybe entrepreneurship. And the companies on the target list are, you know, A.T. Kearney, Bain, BCG, McKinsey. So a lot of the usual suspects for consulting. They want to start school in the fall of 2020. You know, just some other kind of facts and figures from the candidacy. They attended a top 40 undergrad studying computer science and finance. And then they also did a master's degree in engineering from an Ivy League school with a 3.5 GPA. And they have earned the CFA as well, probably as part of their work. Target schools are Harvard, MIT, Kellogg Chicago, and Penn, Wharton. So we've got, again, another person pretty focused on kind of M7 schools. This person doesn't have Stanford or Columbia on their list, but they have all the other M7 schools. And again, another kind of finance person looking to go to consulting in New York. This seems like a little bit of a theme for this episode so far. What's your take on this candidate and their plans and their numbers and stuff?
Well, I think, again, this is a very smart candidate, or it seems to me, just looking at the profile. A 334 GRE is right up there. They've got, you know, not only an undergrad degree, but they've got an Ivy engineering master's degree. They've done their CFA. So super smart person, worked in quantitative finance. So again, high analytical skills. Now, this person seems to me that they want to get out of where they are. Which again, maybe that's the same case with our previous candidate, but you know, we're making assumptions to make these declarations, but that's what it appears, sort of on paper. But this person is also quite interesting. He or she has done some pro bono consulting along the way, has done some teaching, high school, college and post-college teaching. So, you know, doing that kind of stuff is quite interesting to ADCOM. Obviously, doing teaching develops communication skills as well as shows that you really care about sort of sharing knowledge and various other things. So that's very good. And it seems to me this person's sort of really debating, because I'd asked this person in the comments to explain a little bit more about their goals, whether it is consulting, whether it is entrepreneurship or a mix of both. And it seems to me that they want to take, again, the reasonably logical step of moving out of quantitative finance to go into consulting, basically a natural step after the MBA. So you're actually practicing what you've learned in the MBA program for 2 or 3 years in consulting, and then step into what appears to suddenly be a passion of this candidate, which is to develop a food business.
Yeah, I saw that comment, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to learn why food business. So what is it about this candidate's past that sort of stimulated that particular interest? And if there's some theme there along the way.
The thing that jumped out for me in their comment about that is they said, you know, starting a food business probably focused on import-export and bringing specialty goods to Americans. And I couldn't help but wonder if maybe this person has some other nationality or background, because that's often the case if you're interested in that kind of a, you know, maybe they have a cultural background from another part of the world that they want to kind of, they think there's a market to bring that into the U.S. or something. So in any event, that was the piece I was like, okay, because, I mean, on the surface, I was like, well, the numbers are pretty solid, right? I mean, the GRE is really strong and GPA is solid. And they went to, you know, good schools too. And they have a master's degree. So there's lots of evidence of academic ability. And so everything's there. But then I'm sort of like, okay, well, they're working in finance. They want to go to consulting. Nothing's jumping out at me as like, I'm going to remember this candidate when I get home after having read 50 files. Until they talked about food and this idea for kind of a business around that. And they actually, I don't know if you saw that, but they actually posted in their entry a comment about, you know, wanting to write an essay about this food business idea they have, but also feeling like they need to talk about consulting because that's maybe the short-term plan. So any kind of, before we move on to the next, any parting thoughts on how they might handle that dilemma? Because I think that's a you know, valid dilemma, and I would hate for the committee not to learn about the food stuff, but I understand the balance. So what's your take?
Unless I'm reading it wrong, Graham, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I see the short-term goal is to go into consulting again to sort of really get out there and do what you've learned. And then exit consulting, which a lot of MBAs do after 2 or 3 years or whatever, to then pursue your entrepreneurial endeavor, which again would, I'm not saying it's standard for MBA graduates, but it wouldn't be unusual then to pursue your food business idea. So I would assume you do it that way. So many of the MBA program application essays will ask for short or long-term goals. And even if they're only asking for short-term goals, to explain your short-term goal, you anchor it to your long-term ambition. So I definitely would bring that up, but I would hopefully bring it up and then back it up with why this is such a passion of yours that you're planning to pursue. You know, this is a quantitative finance person, computer science, finance degrees, followed by an Ivy engineering degree. It just doesn't...
Yeah, where's the...
you know...
Yeah.
Yes. So it needs good explanation. But clearly, you know, we all know people that have very diverse interests, including ourselves. So it's very explainable. Just make sure it's well explained.
Agreed. And I would say one more thing before we move on. I would suggest that this person do some digging around which of the leading strategy consulting firms do a lot of work in the food and beverage industry. Because I guarantee you that there's probably a firm or two out there that have, you know, built a reputation in helping. You know, I mean, there's been so many. I mean, gosh, that industry is just rife with mergers and acquisitions and, you know, global kind of business challenges, right? And so if they could identify that, you know, and maybe that's why A.T. Kearney's on the list. I don't know enough about these consulting firms to know where they all are kind of, you know, have a heavy, you know, food practice in their consultancy, right? But I would recommend doing that kind of digging because that could be a nice way to transition and to indicate, okay, here's where I want to go. And this is why, actually, because in the long term, I want to, having worked on a whole bunch of food projects with the consulting firm, I'd love to, you know, then get out and do my own thing in that space. So that'd be my parting thoughts on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think that's smart. Yeah.
So we're going to go all the way from New York City to Zambia for our next candidate. So really across a very large ocean. And this person, aside from being located in Zambia, has a 3.49 GPA. They've been working for 3.5 years. They did not give us a GMAT or GRE score, which is fine. They maybe haven't taken it yet. And they're currently working in a role that they describe as finance manager And after the MBA, they would like to get into consulting, private equity, or entrepreneurship. And the companies they list as potentially targeting are Accenture, Bain, and McKinsey. They want to start school in the fall of 2020, and they offered up some notes indicating that they're working for a French engineering company that does solar power in Zambia. And they've worked, it sounds like, in quite a few countries across Africa in a similar capacity. They list, you know, South Africa, Madagascar, Mauritius, Kenya. So they've been all around that region of the world. They want to build their core competencies in an MBA program, learning about leadership, communication, economic strategy, and market fluctuations. And they would also like to improve financial knowledge from different perspectives. And they're wondering if there's any chance that someone like them might get into a top MBA program. And the schools that they listed as a target are Berkeley, Haas, ESA in Spain, INSEAD, London Business School, and Stanford. So what's your take, Alex? What do you think of this person?
This person is really interesting, but also I think this person is sort of needs to be a little bit more focused in their whole application strategy. And it could simply be a symptom of being earlier in the process. As you noted, he or she doesn't have a test score. Hasn't divulged their test score if they have one. So I'm guessing they don't have one yet. And, you know, obviously that's a hurdle they've got to overcome. And hopefully, you know, if they get in the 700s, the 320s, or push it higher than that, then they become, you know, they're within range for these schools. Other reasons why I think this person is quite early in the process. The schools that they've selected, world-class schools, but from California to France via London and Paris and Barcelona. Oddly, nothing on the East Coast. I'm like, what is wrong with the East Coast, where the most of the M7 schools are? So that's quite interesting. And also just the goal focus. In the notes, as you said, they'd like to gain more core competency on leadership, communications, and so forth, which is great. But I want to see those the goal focus to focus on exactly what you plan to do post MBA, and then what your long term goal is, your ambition, and so on and so forth. Right. So they need to develop that aspect. I mean, they've listed consulting, private equity, and entrepreneurship, but that to me again suggests that they haven't really developed their plan. They have some ideas, and clearly consulting, private equity, and entrepreneurship are related in certain circumstances. I love the work experience. I think this person can bring a lot to an MBA program. If they've, you know, working in these African countries, working on solar power, I mean, this sounds really interesting stuff. In this day and age, in the global economy, where these sorts of energy companies are getting more and more interesting. So lots to like if the person can really tighten things up and get that focus.
So since we talked about food with the last candidacy that we just reviewed, I'm going to make an analogy here. I feel like this candidacy has all the ingredients except for one of, you know, that are needed, right? And that one ingredient is they don't have the test yet. And they, as you said, they need to take the test and ideally need to score well on the test. So, you know, 700 plus or whatever. And then the real question though, I think comes down to the recipe, right? So they will have the ingredients if they can take the test and do reasonably well on it. But then they got to make the recipe. And that's where this issue of, you know, the goals are sort of too fuzzy, and so there's work to be done there. But I couldn't agree more though that the, you know, getting someone in the classroom who's worked in all those countries, you know Zambia, South Africa, Madagascar, Mauritius, Kenya, I mean that's gold, right? I mean that's someone, and not only that, they're working in a field that, as you correctly point out, is kind of a I don't know what the word is, sort of a hot topic or hot spot of a field, right? In terms of renewables and the energy sector, right? So I think, yeah, this person could clearly be a great addition to any MBA classroom, but they're just going to need to show that they've got the, you know, the kind of academic chops by taking the test, and then that they can kind of hone in on what it is they want to do. Because, and ideally, I mean, I feel like I say this all the time, but ideally their career goals would somehow dovetail with some of their past experiences, whether it's something related to Africa and infrastructure or energy, you know, something that would help so that they can make a compelling argument as to why they should be the one, you know, going to the McKinsey office that deals with projects in Africa, or, you know, whatever it is, and that, you know, how that's going to allow them to then do projects that lead to their long-term goal of setting up their own renewable energy company or whatever it is. So yeah, so this person just has a little more work to do, but I agree, really interesting candidacy, and I'm so glad they shared. I think the last bit is the school selection. And the only thing I noted is, you know, INSEAD's a 1 year, actually a little less than a year program. And the others are all kind of more traditional 2 year programs. So that sort of jumped out at me. And I do agree. My guess is that, I hate to say this, but I feel like there are MBA applicants out there, particularly in the early stages of the application cycle, who pick their MBA programs based on a combination of like ranking plus what cities would be fun to live in. And so I'm getting a vibe that they're interested in the, you know, being out in the Valley potentially, that might dovetail with their interest in entrepreneurship and, you know, private equity. But you know, they're also someone who's worked on the continent of Africa and probably know a lot about Europe. And so wow, landing in Spain or, you know, or London or France might be desirable too. So I felt like it was more like, this is where I might want to live. And so where are the good programs in those markets? But you're right. I mean, there could be, you know, if there's someone that's really passionate about a specific field like energy, there might be other programs out there that they should be looking at that aren't in these locations. You know, UT Austin comes to mind, or even some of the other schools on the East Coast have some good placement in that domain. So anyway, something to consider.
Yeah, we all know how wonderful Philadelphia is, Graham. We can't leave out Philadelphia.
Right.
But the other thing about this candidate, he or she doesn't need to be focused on applying in round one. They've got time. Because, you know, they bring something different. They're not going to, they're not part of that, an overrepresented group that where the urgency is to get the application in early before the place is filled for whatever part they're overrepresented for. This is a candidate that will be sought out in round two if they've really got all their ducks in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if they could do it for round one, do it. But you're right, there's no real urgency because, as you say, they're not going to be overrepresented in the pool. And it sounds like, yeah, they may need some time here over the summer to figure everything out. Or they may do a combination of applying to a couple schools in the first round and then, you know, a couple more as needed in round two. Let's move on to the next candidate that we're going to look at in terms of an apply wire entry. This one came to us. Let me just make sure I've got. Yeah, okay. This person is actually in Philadelphia, and they have a GMAT score of 710, a GPA of 3.8, and 8 years of work experience. The pre-MBA career has been in finance and entrepreneurship. And after business school, they want to continue being an entrepreneur. They've indicated that they have, you know, in terms of their extracurriculars, they founded a startup, which I think is in addition to a full-time job that they have. And they run that startup, and they also have a family with young kids that takes a lot of time. They're applying to Harvard Business School, or considering at least Harvard Business School, MIT Sloan, Stanford, UChicago, and Wharton. So, you know, any thoughts on this person? I think this was one that we both chimed in on when we saw it come across the wire. But what are your thoughts on this candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, again, I hate to say it, but I really like this candidate. So we're getting, we've got a set of candidates that I'm pretty hyped up about on ApplyWire right now. What I like about this candidate is, he or she has been quite a, I'm not saying aggressive in a bad way, but in a good way, really sort of sought out opportunities in their career to date. So has really sort of navigated their way around their career to get into the situation they're currently in, which is kind of like an entrepreneur in residence type role in a big tech firm, which just sounds pretty cool to me. And like you said, they bootstrap their own business whilst also working full time. So this is a go-getter, and we like go-getters, I think. So from that perspective, I really like this person. I think as an entrepreneur going to business school, it's very important that you come across as someone that's going to be fully engaged in the business school experience. And you're not just there to sort of network a little bit and tinker around with your business and so forth. But this person has convinced me that that is exactly their plan. So they wrote a long comment sort of responding to that, which I totally have bought into. So, yeah, I really like this person. As you pointed out, he or she's got a little bit more experience than the average. And again, because of that, they need to show or demonstrate that they will fully engage with the MBA experience. They have family, which presents some other, I'm not saying challenges, but that sort of adjusts things also a little bit. So looking at the partners, clubs and various other things at the school they're applying. They're applying, to all the top schools, but I'm a big believer, if you're interested in entrepreneurship, that's your sort of long-term goal. And quite honestly, it's a lot of candidates' long-term goals, whether they admit it or not, they want to run a company. But if you're interested in entrepreneurship, you've got to get into the best school that you can, because that gives you the best network and the best resources that you'll have access to for the rest of your career.
And there's no shortage of good schools on the list here. A couple of things jumped out at me. So the first thing, I think this would be helpful for our listeners on Wiretaps here, is that, you know, different candidates face different challenges when they apply to business school. So, you know, in this case, we're talking about an older candidate. So if this person has 8 years of experience, he or she is likely, you know, to be 30 years old, right? Most people graduate from university at around 22. So that puts them, you know, as a kind of an outlier, right, in terms of people who apply to business school, at least in these kind of full-time top, you know, sort of M7 type programs. And that's not to say that there aren't a bunch of 30-year-olds in each and every one of these schools every year, but it's definitely a minority in the student population. The averages are usually more in the kind of, you know, 27, 28. You know, a place like INSEAD is a little bit, you know, has slightly older candidates. But generally speaking, M7, this person's going to be older. And that's not to say that the schools discriminate or don't want older candidates, but what often happens is older candidates fail to tick some of the boxes that give an admissions officer comfort with accepting them, as you point out. So for example, you know, this person hasn't been in a kind of academic environment for 8+ years, right? And it'll probably be more than that by the time they matriculate. And so the committee needs to be convinced that they can, you know, kind of survive the rigor of the MBA curriculum and kind of get back into that sort of student mold after being out in the real world for quite some time. And that's where the GMAT becomes quite important, because it's the only very recent indication of this candidate's academic ability. So I mentioned that in a comment, and the candidate wrote back saying that their quant score was really great and they're hoping it's just enough. If I had my druthers, I would, and if they felt like they could do better on the test, I would have them take it again. But that's just because of the fact that they have schools like Harvard and Stanford on their list, which have these really high, and Wharton as well, high average GMAT scores. So that is a concern to me. I also think that, yeah, entrepreneurs and older candidates often get labeled as maybe, as you say, not being as likely to be participative. You know, they might kind of show up, go to class, get what they need and get out. And so being able to demonstrate a desire to get involved down to the very clubs that you intend to be active with, or as you correctly point out, showing that your partner is excited and you know, that he or she has been learning about the partners club. And there's even like a kids club for a lot of these schools. So, you know, just making sure that you seem all in when you apply as an older candidate is really critical. So I have to say, if I were counseling this person, I would throw in a school that's maybe not M7, but that they would be happy to attend. You know, something, you know, maybe it's just sort of top 15 or top 20, if they're really keen to get the MBA. Because right now I have this fear that the list of targets is just sort of all, it's kind of all reach and no middle or kind of safety ground. So that would be my advice there too.
Yeah, I mean, and I would agree with you. I think I'm a little bit more like the person has a 3.8 GPA. Hopefully it's from a pretty decent school.
Yeah, they gave us a good hint as to what school it is. I'm not going to say, but they did mention that they went to an undergraduate institution in Boston that is renowned for entrepreneurship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they went to Babson.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, cat's out of the bag.
So decent school.
Yeah.
That little nugget. But you know, I guess overall I'm a little bit more comfortable this candidate applying to M7 as their fit schools, and certainly Harvard and Stanford are reaches for anybody. So you know they're always very challenging, no matter who you are. But I see them fitting quite well with some of the remainder of the M7. But there's certainly, you know, putting in a school in the next tier down, you know, I don't think they have Haas listed, but they have Stanford listed, so Haas might be a good addition on the West Coast, or maybe Yale or Tuck or whatever on the East Coast. But that's by the by. The other thing I'd point out, though, with 8 years of experience, all our points I think are very valid. The other side of that is this person should have more stories to tell and should have more opportunities to show that they're truly an impact person. And that's what schools are looking for. People that, no matter where they are in their lives, in their work experience, their outside of work and so on and so forth, they've demonstrated impact. And I would hope this person has multiple examples of being able to show that.
Yeah, agreed. I think this person would be really interesting to have in the classroom. So it's just more a question of, can they tick the box so that the AdCom feels comfortable and doesn't worry about getting a call from, you know, career services or, you know, an academic program's office about performance, or, you know, because sometimes these older candidates come in to an MBA program and they want to work at, like, as an investment banker at Goldman, or even as a consultant at McKinsey or something, and those firms are going to be less likely to take a 32-year-old with, you know, 8 years of experience and a 2-year MBA afterwards. So it's just a question of being able to make sure that, I mean, it sounds like this person has goals that are very well suited, you know, to what they've done and would be, you know, feasible. So again, I think they could be a really welcome addition to the classroom. So yeah, again, just maybe consider the school selection a little bit, but overall, strong candidacy, and I really appreciate, you know, we had a good diverse group in this week's episode. Encourage everyone to stay tuned and obviously keep sharing your profiles on ApplyWire. For now, I think Alex and I, you know, with these wiretaps, we're going to probably stick to ApplyWire for a little while because that's the time of year we're at. Everyone's kind of considering their strategy. So stay tuned for more episodes. And as always, please rate and review this podcast in iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you listen. We're also on Spotify now. So thanks, Alex, for taking part. And we'll be back, I guess, in a week to do another batch of these.
Thanks for having me, Graham. Always a pleasure.
All right. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.